Producers and creators are the sources of all value on the planet. MC Lobster, the host of the top-rated business and investing podcast Cashflow Ninja, is on a mission with Producers Wealth to help producers create, protect, and multiply their wealth outside of Wall Street in any economy by creating systems and processes that help them increase their production, provides them with liquidity, passive income generators, and opportunities for enormous growth. Learn more about their time-tested and proven systems at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com.
Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Here is your host inside the dojo, MC Laubscher.
Hello, Cashflow Ninjas. MC Laubscher here, and welcome to another episode of the Cashflow Ninja. I have a great show for you today, and in today's show, I'm joined by former economic hitman, John Perkins. Do you think you are informed on how the world really works? Do you think that the news media, whether mainstream and or alternative media, is really trying to inform you of what really is going on and how things really work? Do you think you know the truth about world leaders in Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America, for example? Have you noticed the term oligarchs only apply to the Russians, but Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg are just greedy capitalists? Have you noticed every country that are not going along with Western countries' agenda have leaders that are referred to as strongmen, dictators, and or very dangerous people? If you think you know how things work and what's going on, be prepared to be shocked in today's interview. I'll share a quick story with you. Now, I grew up in South Africa, as you might know, and I saw that presidents in that country would take on massive loans from the World Bank and IMF and blow it all on military spending, purchasing, for example, fighter jets and submarines from Western military contractors. South Africa, by the way, not at war with anyone. And what makes this even more comical is that very few people in the Air Force and in the Navy could even operate these newly purchased weapons. I mean, it really didn't make sense when you looked at it, and it looked almost idiotic. Just think of all the money that could have actually been used towards a strategic plan of creating opportunities for the poor masses in South Africa, allowing upward mobility, and also strategically creating a thriving middle class. When I came across the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, everything started to make sense to me, and I started to see what was really going on. This has really helped me understand the way the world really works, and position my investments and my wealth strategy accordingly. Now, John Perkins, as a chief economist at a major international consulting firm, advised the World Bank, United Nations, IMF, the United States Treasury Department, Fortune 500 corporations, and leaders of countries in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East. His new book, The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that was published in 2016, was a follow-up on his classic New York Times bestseller. And in this book, it brings the story of economic hitman and jackal assassins up to date and chillingly home to the United States. It goes on to provide practical strategies to transform the failing global death economy, as John refers to it, into a regenerative life economy. The first edition of A Confessions of an Economic Hitman spent 73 weeks on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list and has been translated into 32 languages. It, along with his other books, The Secret History of the American Empire, that's also, by the way, a New York Times bestseller, and Hoodwinked, were groundbreaking exposés on the clandestine operations that created the current global crises. They also set the stage for the revelations and strategies detailed in the New Confessions of an Economic Hitman. John is the founder and board member of Dream Change and the Pacamama Alliance, nonprofit organizations devoted to establishing a world future generations will want to inherit. He has lectured at Harvard, Oxford, and more than 50 other universities around the world. And he's the author of books on indigenous cultures and transformation, including Shapeshifting, The World as You Dream It, Psychonavigation, Spirit of the Shuar, and Stress-Free Habit. He has been featured on ABC, NBC, CNN, CNBC, NPR, A&E, The History Channel, Time, The New York Times, The Washington Post, Cosmopolitan, Elle, Der Spiegel, and many other publications, as well as in numerous documentaries, including The End of Poverty, Zeitgeist Addendum, An Apology of an Economic Hitman. And he was also awarded the Lennon Ono Grant for Peace in 2012 and the Rainforest Action Network Challenging Business as Usual Award in 2006. My friend Dave Zook from The Real Asset Investor says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. The Real Asset Investor team creates value for investors looking for high yield returns from multifamily apartments, ATM machines, and self-storage investments. Their syndications offer attractive investment opportunities that produce strong cash flow, equity growth, huge tax incentives. They are truly passive and managed by a world-class team. To learn more about the exciting investment opportunities The Real Asset Investor offers, such as their multifamily, ATM, and self-storage syndications, please visit cashflowninja.com/realassetinvestor. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, MC. It's great to be with you.
Very, very excited to connect. I've been a very big fan of your work and your books and all of the projects that you've been involved with. John, can you please share a little bit about your background and journey with my listeners?
Well, back in the 70s, I was chief economist at a major international consulting firm. And I had about up to 50 people working for me on and off, different numbers. But my job was really to identify countries that had resources our corporations wanted, labor or other resources, and then to arrange huge loans to that country from the World Bank or one of its sister organizations. The money didn't actually go to the country, however. It went directly to our own corporations to build big infrastructure projects in that country. Things like hydroelectric dams or other electric power grid projects, highways, industrial parks, things that made huge profits for our companies and also benefited a few wealthy families in those countries, but left the rest of the population worse off because money was diverted from education, healthcare, and other social services in order to pay the interest on the debt. And in the end, the principal was never bought down. So we'd go back and say, since you can't pay off your loans, sell your resource real cheap to our corporations without environmental or social regulations, or allow us to build a military base on your soil, vote with us at the next United Nations meeting against Cuba, or some such thing along those lines. And in the few cases where leaders would not accept these conditions, they were visited by what we call jackals. And I write in The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman about two of my clients, Jaime Roldós, president of Ecuador, and Omar Torrijos of Panama, who both were taken out because they didn't buy into these conditions. They didn't play that game.
Right. Well, the world definitely appears to operate one way, and then you realize it completely operates a different way. And there's some clues. I was just thinking when you were talking, and you mentioned this in your book too, about a certain corporation that took control of the water in Latin America. So you might see a plot in a Bond movie or something like this and think nothing of it. But the reality is, and you touched on the economic hitman, they operate, and this is the world that we live in and how the world truly works behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, you were referring to the Bechtel Corporation in Bolivia.
That's right.
Yeah, when that was something that was pretty much set up through the World Bank. Bechtel really screwed Bolivia, or tried to. And in the end, the Bolivians rebelled, and it was under the leadership to a large degree of Morales, who now is president of Bolivia. So he was this indigenous leader. He's an Aymara from an indigenous community. And he organized a lot of the marches and protests against a number of things, including the Bechtel water situation in Cochabamba. And as a result, Bechtel had to get out. And Morales became president eventually, and still is.
Yeah. So, and we'll definitely dive into the solutions, because this is what I like about your work, is you tell it like it is and what's going on and how the world operates, but you also give a lot of solutions for folks. So, and things that they can do, because we do have power, and we'll get to that in a second. You've touched on quite a number of your clients, and it's sad to, when you look back at some of them, Torrijos and Jaime Roldos that you spoke about, these were all leaders that were assassinated, as you mentioned in your book, that the jackals come in. What were some of the, you know, how did that impact you personally? Because you became quite good friends with some of them. I believe you were very good friends with Amor Torrijos.
Yeah, I was. Torrijos, I had great admiration for Torrijos, because he was truly a nationalist. He was truly trying to help the Panamanian people. He was not in it for his own sake. He also was a very charismatic guy, a lot of fun. You know, he loved to party and have a good time. But at the same time, he really stood up to the United States. And he did it because his biggest issue was the Panama Canal, which he eventually got signed a treaty with Carter to turn the canal over to the United States, from the United States to Panama later, which was a big issue for him. But beyond that, he championed rights of smaller countries not to be bullied by bigger countries. And so he became quite famous throughout the world, throughout Latin America especially, but also in Africa and other places, as this leader of a very small country that had one important resource, which was the Panama Canal, and use that resource as a way to fight for his country's independence from what he called imperialism. And I liked the guy a lot, and he had a lot of courage, and it was difficult for me because my job was to convince him to change his ways, to give in to us. That was my job. And I knew that if I didn't succeed, his life would be in danger, and he knew it too. And so I had very mixed feelings. I deeply respected the fact that he didn't give in to me. On the other hand, it was my job to get him to give in, so I tried to get him to give in, and he didn't. And he went down in his private plane crashed, and there's no question in my mind, or most of people's minds that have looked into it, that it was an assassination, not a crash. And incidentally, it was within less than 3 months from the time when Jaime Roldós, the president of Ecuador, who Omar respected and thought of as a brother, who also stood up to the United States over oil, he died exactly the same way. His private plane crashed in almost the identical circumstances, less than 3 months before Torrijos' crash. So these were very, very suspicious incidents. And incidentally, the United States, the CIA, Henry Kissinger have admitted to being involved in the overthrow and killing of Allende of Chile, and Arbenz of Guatemala, and Lumumba of the Congo, and Diem of Vietnam. So we've actually admitted to being involved in many of these situations. It's no big secret.
Yeah, and we had a discussion before this interview too. I'm originally from South Africa, and you know, you would see certain things that leaders would do after they get elected that absolutely made no sense. And I don't think anybody would understand that. I think the example I used in South Africa is buying really expensive military aircrafts, where the country hasn't been at war for over 30 years, or maybe even close to 40. This kind of puts it into perspective that these folks get elected on platforms where they run on a platform to serve the people that elect them. And as soon as they get into office, there's someone that knocks on their door and steps inside and really lays down how the game is played and what their options are, which ties into my next question of, this empire, this invisible empire, has been called a couple of different things. It's been called a global corporate empire. You know, we've heard the term deep state, the secret government, the corporatocracy. Who are these folks? What are their goals behind all of this? Do elected leaders and world officials wield any power still today?
Those are complex questions and interesting ones. And I don't pretend to know all the answers. And in my experience, human beings are not terribly prone to really deep organization. I'm quite familiar with the CIA, and one of the things that I find interesting about the CIA is that it's a bunch of fiefdoms working under one big empire, the CIA. But the director obviously doesn't have control of the CIA because the director is appointed by the president, and they change every few years. We've just seen that happen, you know. And no long-term super spy or high-up official in the CIA who's been there for 20, 30 years is going to share a lot of the CIA's secrets with some guy like that.
Right.
Well, the director is kind of a figurehead, a spokesperson, and may help to set certain policies, but doesn't really know what's going on. I think we can say the same thing about so much in the world, that I think there's some of the people who run our biggest businesses and own them, the CEOs, and who also have a lot of the high stock in them, they're all driven by one basic goal, and that is to maximize short-term profits, because that's a system that's been fomented ever since Milton Friedman really advocated it when he won the Nobel Prize in 1976. We were moving in that direction long before that, but that really sealed the deal. And ever since then, in every business school and everywhere else, we're taught that if we just maximize profits, everything else will fall in place. We're seeing that isn't true. But given the fact that all businessmen, the really wealthy ones, the really powerful ones, the ones who run the big corporations, follow that, see that as their mandate, they see it that they have a mandate, in essence, to do whatever it takes to maximize profits. And that includes bribing elected officials. And they can bribe them legally now, in the United States at least, through campaign financing and offers of very lucrative lobbying jobs when the senators or the representatives decide to leave Congress or don't get elected. They know they're going to get these incredibly lucrative jobs with these corporations. Those are really bribes. They're totally legal, but they shouldn't be. They are. So strictly speaking, they're not crimes.
Right.
But so what you see is you'll see like companies like, let's say, Nike and Reebok competing in the marketplace very strongly. But if it's proposed that some law comes up that's going to affect the profits of those two companies, they will totally come together to fight that law. And so there is truly a kind of conspiracy there, but it's illegal. It's not illegal. So legally speaking, it's not a conspiracy. It's
right.
Illegal. But certainly it goes on. And yet in my experience, it's not some small group of people that get together every week or every month or every 3 months in some dark room smoking cigars and deciding, well, this is the way we're going to run the world. It's less formal than that. And yet it still is a control by the very, very rich on a significant level.
You're listening to John Perkins on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. We will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
MC Lobsher is the host of the top-rated business and investing podcast, Cashflow Ninja, and also the president of Producers Wealth. Producers Wealth assists people in creating, protecting, and perpetually multiplying wealth in any economy through creating processes that help them increase their production, provide them with liquidity, passive income generators, and opportunities for enormous growth. Learn more about their time-tested and proven systems at yourownbankingsystem.com.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the United States. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Learn how to find the best deals by downloading your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com. That's NORADA realestate.com.
You're listening to John Perkins on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, and now back to our interview. Yeah, I would say too, just from what I've read too, and your work, it's interests that are aligned, as you've mentioned, to maximize profits. There's no dark, cloudy room with men smoking cigars, drafting plan. Interests are aligned to maximize profit and make as much money as they can, regardless of ethics and morals and so forth. And that's kind of the language that all of them speak, which brings me to the next question, because this ties into the world that we live in right now at the Middle East. And there's a lot of things that have happened there. I know that you've shared some of the information with regards to Saudi Arabia and the petrodollar deal. Can you share a little bit more about that? And then maybe touch upon, because I think Iraq was kind of the kickoff, if you want to call it that, but one of the first countries that went in to be destabilized. And the rest, I mean, it's Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, Somalia, Yemen. I mean, we could just go on and on. But I think that will be the first one. But if you could touch just on Saudi Arabia before that.
Okay, I'll do that. But MC, I'd like to just step back a bit and comment on what we talked about before.
Yes.
But I think a really great example right now is in the United States. Our president is bragging about the huge military budget, $700 billion or something. I can't even keep it straight. Huge, huge military budget. It's almost seven times bigger than Russia's, for example. And what we see is that's huge corruption, because a great deal of that budget is going to pay for military equipment that's essentially obsolete. I mean, we don't really need more aircraft carriers. We've got drones, we've got missiles, you know. I mean, one or two aircraft carriers, maybe, yes, to take helicopters someplace to move special forces in, perhaps. But so much of it is wasted. And one of the reasons it gets through is because just about every state in the United States has a facility of some sort that feeds into the Pentagon one way or another. So almost every congressperson from every state in the United States wants a bigger piece of the military budget. So they all push for more military spending so that they can go back to their states and say, hey, we increased employment because, you know, this money is being spent on. And again, you know, it's not a conspiracy,
right,
for these Congress people, but it is in a way, because they're all sort of behind, you know, like, oh, I'm behind their hands saying, oh, yeah, we got to pass this because it'll help our state. And every one of them says the same thing. When we go to the Middle East, we know that there was a conspiracy on the part of the Bush administration to prove that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq so they could attack. We know that a very top official, a former official, an ambassador, Joe Wilson, there's been a movie made now about this, called Bush basically a liar when Bush said that Wilson had found a yellow cake in one of the African countries. And right. Wilson said, no, I didn't find that. And as a result, his wife, Valerie Plame, who was a deep cover CIA agent, was exposed. The CIA people were risked. The CIA was very, very upset about that. But the conspiracy went on to convince us all that they're weapons of mass destruction so that we could attack Iraq, which obviously had nothing to do with 9/11. I think we all know that today. So we do see these incidents that happen like that. And that's very, very, very dangerous. I think we're seeing today, under the Trump administration, a lot of these sorts of things going on, this idea that we're terribly threatened by Russia. And I think actually what's going on is, yeah, we're becoming threatened by Russia. Russia's getting scared of us. I was just in Russia recently, and I was there at an event where both I was speaking and President Putin was speaking. And I, you know, the impression I came away with is Putin's done a lot of bad things, no question about that. But I don't think he's stupid enough to want to go to war with the United States. However, there's this horrible build up today. We're being pushed closer and closer to a Cold War. And of course, that's making fortunes for the military-industrial complex. Is it a conspiracy? I don't know. What it's doing is it's going to, you know, increase profits tremendously in every business that's involved in the military-industrial complex, and a huge number of businesses are involved in that. So in the Middle East, we're seeing this build up. I think a lot of it has to do with strategic locations. Places like Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria are very strategically located as far as pumping oil from the oil fields up in former Soviet countries and up near the Caspian Sea in that area down into the Persian Gulf. There's no question there's a strategic issue there. But I think the bigger issue is that huge amounts of money are made from war or the threat of war, and also from destroying countries and then rebuilding them. So in my opinion, that's probably the biggest reason for all of this. And in the process, of course, we create a situation where people become terrorists, where they get disillusioned in these countries, they want to fight back, and that increases the ability for us to have war. It just goes on, and it's a very, very sad situation, because when you come right down to it, we all realize that we're living on a fragile space station, the Earth, with no shuttles. And rather than constantly fighting each other, we ought to work together to steer the space station on a course that's going to be survivable for our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. We're not doing a very good job of that.
Absolutely, because if you just think about it, around the world, and I've been fortunate to travel as well, we're all humans. We all want the same thing. we all want a better world for our children to grow up in. So if you sit and have dinner with someone from North Korea or from Iran or any of these countries, regardless of where they are, you'll find that there's so much commonality. And I think tying into this just some of the information that you've shared, there's just so much money at stake and a lot of profit for corporations to have constant fear out there and to have constant Cold War standoffs.
Yeah, I don't think very many people want war. There may be a few fanatics out there who really are psychopaths who like destruction and war. But honestly, I don't think Putin's one of them. The head of North Korea might be. I don't know. But, I think that most, like you said, most everybody really would like to see a more peaceful world. The problem is the economy is deeply, deeply tied today to defense, especially in the United States. I mean, something like 20% of our budget officially goes toward military type of things, but if you get into all the various spin-offs, it's a lot closer to 50% of our national budget if you include money that's spent on providing food and healthcare and insurance and banking and so on and so forth to all those other industries that are involved in the military sector. It's a huge part of our economy.
Right, and it certainly hasn't changed, and regardless who's in the White House, it doesn't seem that a lot of things tend to change. Sorry, go ahead.
It's gotten worse because I think after Vietnam, and when I was an economic hitman in the 70s, there was a realization that wars were not working well. Vietnam didn't serve us very well, except to make money for some industries. We lost that war, there's no question, and we went down in infamy. And so during the 70s, we realized that a simpler approach was to use economic hitmen, like me. That was working without the threat of war. We were gaining the same things. We were gaining the markets. We were gaining the resources. We were gaining all of that. Then toward the end of the century, the end of the millennium, actually, beginning during the Clinton administration, a number of these industries that had been making a lot of profits off war realized that they weren't part of all this. That other companies, the construction companies, the General Electrics, those companies that built the infrastructure based on economic hitmen loans, were doing well, but the military industry was not doing well. And so they started putting a lot of pressure on presidents. And by the time the second Bush came along, the pressure was strong. So 9/11 provided the perfect excuse to go back into the military setup. And since then, we've done both. We've got the economic hitmen out there doing their stuff like I did, but we've also gone back to the whole war mentality. And now we're taking a big step backwards into the Cold War mentality.
Right, for the buildup and so forth. I wanted to ask you about North Korea and Iran as well, because it seems that these two countries also come up in conversation as well. Russia is obviously the big one right now. What are some of the your thoughts on what's going on there and or information that you've been privy to?
It's, you know, never having worked in North Korea, it's really hard for me to comment on North Korea. I did spend a lot of time in Iran, but it was under the Shah. So again, it's a bit of a mystery to me. I think that part of the Iran issue is driven by the Russians. I was in Russia less than a year ago, and I spent a lot of time. I got to know the Putin's top economic advisor, Sergei Glazyov, quite well. And, you know, the Russians fear us. They'll say things like, you know, there was a Cold War and we lost it. You won the Cold War and the Soviet Union was destroyed in the process. And suddenly the United States was the world superpower. And rather than really trying to show how democracy and capitalism worked, you exploited countries around the world that had oil and natural gas and other resources. Your corporations went in and essentially raped these countries. And the government got involved, if the U.S. government got involved if the governments of the corporations didn't cooperate. And we in Russia have a lot of resources. We've got oil, lots of oil and gas and lots of other resources. We fear you. We lost. And we have a pretty small military budget. And they see Iran in a way as the doorstep to Russia. So a lot of Russians, and I'm not saying that this is true at all. I don't know what the truth is. But what I will say is that I heard from a lot of Russians that they think that what we're doing in the Middle East, in Iraq and Syria, is a stepping stone into Iran, and Iran is a stepping stone into Russia. And that sounds pretty far-fetched to most Americans, but it does not sound far-fetched at all to Russians. And I think it's important for all of us to recognize that we have very different worldviews. We see Russia as a threat to us, but I can understand why the Russians would be much more likely to see us as a threat to them. We're a much bigger, stronger country, and in many ways, we seem to be much more aggressive around the world. Certainly, Russia has been aggressive in Ukraine, but we are in so many other parts of the world. So I think what's going on in Iran is it's hard to decipher, but I suspect that the Iranians are very much caught in the middle between these two forces. North Korea, thank goodness it looks as though there's some sort of attempts at, well, there's no question, there's attempts at negotiation. Are the North Koreans serious? I think we really have to ask ourselves that question. I don't know. You know, it seems to me like that guy's a little wacko. But who knows, you know, who knows where we could go. And I'm always struck by the fact that Richard Nixon, a real hawk on Vietnam, was the guy that got us out of Vietnam and then opened up China. This guy that was a hawk, in fact, had incredible success at making at equalizing things, at opening the door to these communist nations. And then, of course, he went down as a criminal around Watergate. But this hawk, this conservative Republican hawk, was the one who got us out of Vietnam and opened the door to China. That's a fascinating event. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen under Trump?
Now let's talk about some solutions, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of influence that corporations have and the impact that they have on leaders at home. There's campaign contributions, speaking fees, all these things that you alluded to are not illegal, but they happen. And overseas, there's economic hitmen and jackals, and then obviously the military influencing it. What are some of the things that people can do to hold corporations responsible for their behavior?
Well, MC, I think first of all, we have to recognize that corporations do hold the power. You know, nobody gets elected in this country or most of the world without huge corporate support. And we can see that in China. We see it in Russia, that the corporations have huge influence, global corporations. And really what they've done with this goal of maximizing short-term profits is created what I call a death economy, which is based on militarization, killing people, as we talked about before, the huge budget spent on that, and destroying the earth. Ravaging the resources upon which they depend. It's a death economy. It's consuming itself into extinction. We need to move into a life economy which would be an economic system that, that cleans up pollution, pays companies to clean up the tremendous pollution in the world, mine all that plastic that's floating around in the oceans, and it's sprayed out from oil drilling sites around the world and even filling stations around the world. There's a huge economic opportunity waiting there called a life economy. It's the corporations that need to make this happen. And I think if our your listeners understand that they have power over these corporations, corporations go down if people don't buy from them, if we don't support them. We've seen major corporations like Woolworth and Sharper Image and Bear Stearns and U.S. Steel, Bethlehem Steel. We've seen these huge corporations that no longer exist, Eastern Airlines. There's a whole long list of them. Fortune 500 companies that went down because consumers didn't support them for whatever reason. And CEOs are very aware of that, but they don't know what to do. I've talked to so many CEOs that'll tell me, hey, you know, I want to do the right thing, but if I lose half a percentage of market share, I'll be fired by my top shareholders. So they say, hey, get everybody you speak to send me emails. And the head of Nike has said this, like, you know, Mark Parker, send me emails, because he said, Mark Parker's the president. He says, but if I lose market share, Phil Knight and the other major stockholders will fire me. If every one of your listeners would get involved in a consumer campaign, and it's so easy now with the internet, or start a consumer campaign, pick a company, Nike, Monsanto, Exxon, you name it, pick a company and go get them, because their CEOs know that they've got to listen to their consumers.
No, absolutely. And we've talked about it on the show as well, to vote with every dollar that you spend.
And beyond spending the dollar, you have to tell the corporation why you're not buying from them and why you're buying from their competition.
Absolutely. And John, this ties into a core message in our show, and because it is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it, by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations, and we're only allowed to pass on three principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
Well, I would say, first of all, the number one principle is only support companies that are committed to creating a life economy, a new economic system. This is an exciting time. Support those companies. And two, perhaps support any movements or NGOs that help to move in that direction of supporting a life economy. And I think number three would be not just about money, it's about people in general, is follow your bliss. You know, do what brings you joy. I have seen, MC, way too many people who are dedicated to environmental or social causes get burned out because they start doing things within those causes that are good things, but that don't draw from their heartstrings. I myself have been in that position. And what I've realized is that what I love to do is write. I love to write books. So that's what I need to focus on. And I can write books that aim in this direction. I can have interviews with people like you that aim in this direction, go on and give speeches, because I also enjoy that. Right. I would say to anybody, if you're a carpenter, do what you enjoy, but build houses using sustainable materials as much as possible. And tell your clients, look, this may cost a little bit more, but you're investing in the future for your children by doing this. If you're a plumber, you can do the same thing. You're a teacher. Whatever you do, do what you love to do, but do it and make sure that the goal is to create a life economy, one that's that cleans up the environment and regenerates destroyed environments and creates new technologies that recycle and that don't destroy the earth. If we all move in that direction, we'll get there.
Absolutely. John, where can my listeners reach out to you? Where can they follow you? Where can they stay informed of all of the projects that you're involved in? And where can they purchase all of your books?
Thanks. JohnPerkins.org. I don't sell the books myself there, but there are links. You know, they can get the books in any bookstore or online vendor. But go to JohnPerkins.org and please put your email in a little box. Sign up for my newsletter, which only comes out once a month, and it's a lot of fun. It keeps everybody up to date as to where I'm going to be speaking. I speak in a lot of different venues around the country, around the world. I'd love to meet some of your listeners. So if they put their little name in the box at johnperkins.org, once a month, they'll hear what's coming up.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for connecting, and thank you so much for your time. really appreciate you. And thank you for coming on my show and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for my listeners.
My pleasure, MC. And thank you so much for what you're doing. It's a terribly, terribly important. It's vital what you're doing, getting the word out. Thank you. I deeply appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Life settlement investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the $1 billion blueprint, followed by institutional investors. And if you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements.
Thank you for joining me again on the Cashflow Ninja. Thank you for all your support. You rock. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here at the Cashflow Ninja, please subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes and share our show with family, friends, and your network. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com or text cashflowninja to 44222. I'm also posting daily videos on Facebook and YouTube and will live stream weekly starting May 2018. To make sure you don't miss any of the live streams, please like and subscribe to my Facebook and YouTube platforms. I'm also dropping content on Instagram daily. Be sure to follow us on Instagram to get in on the action. I want to thank you for spending your most precious resource with me today, your time. That's our show for today. Until next time, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.